Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Live in Los Angeles, hour three, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. So Denver has made a move. They are acquiring Teddy Bridgewater from Carolina. By the way, you got to be careful. A week ago, Carolina was talking about, hey, we're going to be in the quarterback market. Today the stories are they just traded Teddy Bridgewater away and they're going to move down in the draft with New England. Sam Darnold's their guy in Carolina. Teams say a lot. It's the same with Denver. Denver, we like Drew Lock. They just went and got Teddy Bridgewater to start. And by the way, one of the things, Joy Taylor joining me, one of the things I talk about all the time, and I get pushback every time, and I'm always right. Every time I've been right. Maturity matters. It will eventually, you'll have to pay the piper if you're immature. So Jameis Winston is wildly immature in college, but wildly productive in the NFL. And when he went to the market, crickets. He took a $1 million deal. Immaturity. Not talent, not size, not arm. He was wildly productive. Judgment. Baker Mayfield, not fifth-year option, that's it. If I'd have told you that you draft Baker Mayfield, he wins a playoff game, you'd be like, oh, they'll sign him to a contract extension. They won't. Only because of maturity. That's the only reason. Johnny Manziel, maturity, out of the league. Cam had no market post-Carolina. Moody, not always there. Prime example, Drew Lock. He comes across as too casual, too flip, too cool. There's a lack of kind of like urgency and maturity. They're already moving off him. His numbers are the exact same as Josh Allen's through 16 or 18 starts. Exact same. But the difference is Josh Allen is all football. That is all he's into. Drew Lock, feel like he's got a lot of Baker Mayfield. He's kind of there. This idea, you always argue with me. The fans always argue with maturity. You're going to pay for it in your draft stock or later. The only reason you wouldn't give Baker a contract extension is maturity. Why not? If I'd have told you 4 years ago, Baker comes in, you beat the Steelers in a playoff game, you would have said, oh, he's a huge success. You give him a contract extension. No, Mahomes showed maturity. Justin Herbert, Josh Allen. Lamar Jackson has shown maturity. Lamar Jackson, we don't even like the way he throws. John Harbaugh said yesterday, he's absolutely going to get the extension. We're not even arguing about it. Half of you guys don't even think he can play. But he's mature. He shows up. He's committed. You know he's all in. He's not doing commercials everywhere. This maturity thing is huge. Now, this year, I don't think we have a maturity guy out there, a question maturity guy. But every third, fourth year, there's a guy I'm like, I'm out. Jameis Winston, I'm like, talented, but immature. Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield. Drew Lock, to me, nothing against the kid, but he just plays with sort of a coolness. Sometimes I think he wants to be cooler than great. He's just kind of casual, lets it go, takes risk. Can't do that in the NFL. Every possession has to be huge. Dak Prescott has total limitations as a thrower. Dan Mullen came on a week ago on the show. Dan Mullen got the Florida job because of Dak Prescott. And he's like, yeah, he was not really impressed with his arm. It was all the other stuff. Teddy Bridgewater will always have work. Tyrod Taylor will always have work. Drew Lock, this could be it. So again, don't argue with me on the maturity thing. You will pay the... Jameis Winston had no market. None. Dude's like 6'4 and a half, big arm, can move around, threw for 5,000 yards. No market. It's not because he can't play. People question his judgment, his maturity. That's why, by the way, Jameis has done a really good job in the last year. Whenever he talks about his commitment. You ever notice that? What does he talk about? Commitment. You notice Cam goes to New England, talks about the buy-in to Belichick. These guys know they know their reputations hurt them. So they go all in on commit. Cam's been like the perfect citizen. Jameis is like losing weight. I'm into this. He gets emotional. So these guys know. Now, pro sports is very unfair. We ask 22-year-old quarterbacks to be as mature as a 45-year-old man. It's totally unfair. But that's the game. I mean, Drew Lock is no less mature than I was at his age. But I couldn't have been a franchise quarterback. I wasn't mature enough at 24 to be. Russell Wilson was. Andrew Luck was. Justin Herbert is. Trevor Lawrence appears to be. So stop arguing the immaturity thing doesn't matter. You will pay a price for it. If you're seen as somebody who's just too casual, too flip, too cool, you'll pay a price. So Denver's moving off Drew Lock. I mean, they brought in Teddy to play. Okay, they brought in Teddy to play. So let's do a new top 10, top 12 mock draft because this changes things. Now, Denver is saying, according to Schefter, we are still in the quarterback market. Oh, come on. Give me a break. You're going to have three quarterbacks. Vic Fangio needs to win now. Denver's a good football market. You got to start getting players and winning games. So my guess is this is the new mock draft with the Teddy Bridgewater. Okay, Trevor Lawrence won. Let's not waste any time. You don't even have to roll video. Trevor Lawrence is going number one to the Jags. Duh. Zach Wilson is going number two to the Jets. Let's not waste any time. No video, too. I think San Francisco is going to draft Mac Jones. I think the scouts want Trey Lance. I think Lynch wants Trey Lance. I think everybody wants Trey Lance. And they're pushing on Shanahan, but he's the star of the franchise. So my guess is they go Mac Jones. Number four, I think, again, this is a guess. I don't think Atlanta needs a quarterback. They have a new offensive coach. He's great with tight ends. And Kyle Pitts is a once-in-a-decade player. I think Atlanta goes Kyle Pitts number four. Number five is Cincinnati. Again, Joe Burrow played with Ja'Marr Chase. Zach Taylor's an offensive-minded coach. I think you can make real arguments. You go on the offensive line. But this is a draft that's deep in offensive line, and you're drafting at the top of round, so you can get that in the second and third round. You can't get Ja'Marr Chase in the second and third round, so I think they go Ja'Marr Chase, number five, big body, ready to play. You know, people, the scouts I trust are like, listen, he's an NFL guy playing in college. He'll walk in and give you 75 catches. He's ready to play. Right, LSU's got these dudes. Swear to God, nobody has more of these guys than LSU. They just got dudes that are they're NFL players at 18 years old. Then Miami is six. Now, I would go to the offensive line because I think they've addressed their wide receiver stuff. But what you're hearing now is Jalen Waddle from Miami is going to go to Miami, so they're going to have, I mean, they've got Will Fuller and Devontae Parker and a good tight end. Basically, they're saying, Tua, this is a top three receiving core. You can't win with this, you can't win. So I would probably go O-line. They're going to go wide receiver. This is what I think they'll do. Seven is Detroit. Who the hell knows what Detroit's going to do? I would never have hired Dan Campbell. Jared Goff cannot throw under duress. They have got to get a better offensive line fast. And you have a chance to get the best left tackle prospect in multiple years, Penei Sewell. I would take him if I'm Detroit. Again, you could argue for a receiver, but if Jalen Waddle and Ja'Marr Chase, Kyle Pitts off the board. Jared Goff, remember, before the Rams got Andrew Whitworth, Goff was seen as a disaster. Like, they got a left tackle. They got him an offensive coach. Things got better. So I would go with Penei Sewell. Number eight, the story is out. New England, Carolina are working on a trade. I think New England moves into the number eight spot. Carolina needs a left tackle. You can get it later. Needs a corner. You can get it later. Carolina needs more players. They move down. New England's got some players, moves up and gets a quarterback, Trey Lance. I think Trey Lance is perfect for Belichick's system. He's, you know, there's a lot of Cam there. Big, strong run, big arm. I think he's a little bit more disciplined player, but that's who I think they'd get. Number nine. Now, Denver's going to tell you they're still in the quarterback market. That's smart business. So somebody may say, let's move up and get him. So Washington, if Washington thinks Denver's still in the quarterback business, Washington may give them a couple of first-round picks. So Denver saying they're in the quarterback business is smart business. If Denver still has the pick, and I'm not so sure Chicago or Washington don't move up, I think they'll take J.C. Horn, the corner. Now, they already addressed corner in free agency, but this defense was a mess last year. As they say, you can never have too many great corners in the NFL. I think Denver would go J.C. Horn. Again, their offensive skill people are fine. Their offensive line's okay. Bridgewater gets the quarterback situation solvent, so I think J.C. Horn. The Cowboys, I think, would have taken J.C. Horn, but they'll take Patrick Surtain or Surtain from Alabama. Well-coached, probably already close to his ceiling. But Dallas has a corner they drafted last year and, like, this gives them another corner. They got 10 picks. I think, you know, Saban's very respected in NFL circles. So you go back-to-back corners, Denver, Dallas, 9-10. 11, now it gets interesting. It's the New York Giants. They've addressed their offensive line. Rashawn Slater is out there, but they've addressed their offensive line in the last 2 years. And they already went and got Kenny Golladay. And they went and got Kyle Rudolph. So they don't need a receiver or a tight end. There's not a tight end you would take. I don't know exactly what the Giants do. Devontae Smith is going to probably be the highest graded player available. And so you go Kenny Golladay, Devontae Smith, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, Kyle Rudolph, Saquon Barkley. And your takeaway is, if you're Dave Gettleman, Gettleman doesn't move down in the draft. That's not what he does. So Gettleman's going to say, bottom line is, I will know by Thanksgiving if this kid can play. Whereas an offensive lineman, Rashawn Slater did not play last year. And there may be a feeling like, well, if I bring Rashawn Slater in, he didn't play college last year, he could be good. But I want to know right now if Daniel Jones can play. Dave Gettleman needs to win, by the way, or Dave Gettleman's going to be out of jobs. So I think he may just say, I'm going to go receiver again. We are stacked offensively. Devontae will help me now. Because I do think some people worry about Slater having opt out. He's kind of a guard tackle. So then at 12, Philadelphia, who I think would have taken Devontae Smith, I don't think they want to move up in the draft because they got too many holes. I think they probably take the best graded player available, and that is Rashawn Slater, the offensive lineman. Their offensive line is good, but getting really old, and I think Philadelphia probably goes with him. So that's kind of what it feels like this morning. Those are the needs. You know, the Giants are very interesting because I could certainly argue myself out of wide receiver, but they've got a real issue here. They think Joe Judge is the right coach. Jason Garrett, probably as the coordinator, gets a second head coaching job next year. That's what I hear. So as long as you got Jason Garrett and as long as you got Joe Judge, who you like, and you've addressed the offensive line, you got Golladay, Sterling Shepard, two good tight ends, star back. Devontae is a plug-and-play guy. He'll play now. He'll play. And Devontae, whether he lasts forever, I don't know. But he's going to play. He's been in a pro offensive system with Sark. He'll play now. And, God, the Giants will go from needing a wide receiver to having a surplus of them. And then I think Philadelphia, which, by the way, I think they'd like – there's reports they would move up. I don't buy they're going to move up. I don't think they have a good enough roster to give up picks. Then I think you just take the best player available and the offensive line. Hey, Jalen Hurts, it can't hurt to have, you know, more protection. Heard brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. All right, there you go. Well, maybe I'm totally wrong, but I do think Denver, by saying we're still in the quarterback market, is really smart.
By saying that they're out of it.
Right. We're still in the quarterback market. The team to watch now, because New England reportedly has talked to Carolina at 8. Keep your eye on Washington. It's a big jump from 20s to 9, but by saying we're in the quarterback market, Denver's trying to get somebody to come up and give them something at 9. That's what they're doing.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Jordan Palmer was just working out with Joe Burrow, a Cincinnati. Jordan works out with everybody. Guys in the league, guys not in the league, guys that are going to be in the league, the guys that are going to get drafted. He's a quarterback consultant, founder of Quarterback Summit, a program that helps quarterbacks reach their potential. And I put Jordan Palmer on a few years ago. God, now it's hard to book him. He's like that good dentist you tell all your friends about. I got this dentist that's great. And then you call the dentist a month later. You can't get in. I barely get Jordan Palmer on the show anymore. He's joining us live. So, you know, at one point I was critical of Joe Burrow. Then I fell in love with him. Does Joe Burrow know now that I like him? Does he understand that?
Well, there's probably two answers to that, two sides to that. One, I think he does. Two, if you know Joe Burrow, you know he does not care what anybody thinks about him. He's got a lot of confidence in himself, and he's a results-driven guy. So he may, but I don't think it matters.
Okay. So what do you make of Teddy Bridgewater? It feels a little bit like a Band-Aid to Denver, and I think they need more than a Band-Aid at quarterback, but kind of describe what Drew – it feels like Teddy's the opposite of Luck. A lock, which is he doesn't take a bunch of chances. He doesn't have a great arm, but you get a grown-up. You can drive the ball down the field. You're not asking him to make, you know, he's got like Alex Smith. There's certain things he can't do. That's okay. That's what it kind of feels like to me, that they're just kind of tired of Locke's potential, but his mistakes are driving him nuts in Denver. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, well, I think we know this, that every franchise is – there's two types of franchises, ones that have a franchise quarterback and ones that are looking for one. But we don't often talk about that stage right before having a franchise quarterback, which is having a room that can act and function like a franchise quarterback. And I think their room got better. Drew is a guy physically, talent-wise, is near the top of the league in terms of pushing the ball down the field, extending the play. You know, other quarterbacks always make comments like, man, Drew drops dimes down the field. And Teddy probably didn't get another opportunity in Carolina because of his inability to push the ball down the field. And yet he completed almost 70% of his passes in 15 weeks last year. And so I think if you take the sum of those two guys, and I get only one guy gets to play, but you take the sum of those two guys, and I think your room got better, the position got better, and you've got now a position where you've got two guys competing with different skill sets, and you get to pick what type of ball you want to play this year and not just pick between two different versions of the same thing.
Based on the schemes that New England runs with Josh McDaniels, and you played in the NFL for 6 years, does Justin Fields or Trey Lance fit those schemes better, in your opinion?
Well, I actually think that the thing that has made Josh McDaniels, you know, so good and so much longevity and the trajectory even that he's on right now. And I get they had a tough year offensively last year, but that was a lot more to do with personnel, is Josh's ability to adapt to what he has. And so I don't think it's, you know, I think of like bad coaches, they look at things like they go, well, can this guy play in my system? Great coaches go, can I build a system around that great player? And I think Josh is the latter of those two. And so what he would prefer, I have no idea. But both of those guys do have some crossover in terms of their skill set. And then they both have some uniqueness to their skill set as well. But I think you can make a case for either of them in New England. The key thing with New England is they have to have an alpha male, and they have to have somebody who is supremely confident. Because again, until they have that at quarterback and the production, they're trying to fill a void that Tom Brady left.
Everybody says, you know, Mac Jones can play now. Trey Lance, that's a high ceiling guy, can't play now. Okay, I don't know if that's true. That's just what I read. When you look at Trey Lance, if I said, okay, New England got him, how long would it take? I mean, when you look at Trey Lance, you know him, you've worked with him, you've seen him. Is he 2 years away? What does that mean, not ready to play now? Or is he?
Well, I think there's the question isn't, is somebody ready to play? You can throw anybody out there, right? I mean, I remember coming out, Bruce Gradkowski was a seventh-round pick by John Gruden in Tampa, and he had a really good rookie year. He got thrown in there. We watched Gardner Minshew do the same thing 2 years ago, right? So ready to play and ready to win are two different things. Like, is this player on a team that can win, and is he good enough to help them win? Or you can put a really good rookie on a team that's not ready to win, and they look like a rookie. And so I look at Trey Lance and his resume, he shouldn't have to apologize for that. You know, playing at that school, being favored in most of the games, only playing X amount of games, he shouldn't have to apologize for that. Just like Mac Jones should not have to apologize for having awesome receivers for the last year. Right. And so I look at Trey and I think there's a unique trait that he has that no one's talking about. And if you create a player on Madden or NBA 2K, you get so many attributes: size, arm talent, strength, speed. You get to pick all these physical attributes, right? But there's an attribute that Trey has that nobody realizes, and I think may get missed on this whole like Zoom evaluation era, and that is that Trey is one of the coolest, most likable, magnetic personalities that I've actually seen in a while. And so when you take a guy where you're comparing arm talent that's the same, size that's the same, you know, resume that's the same, you have to factor that in, that this guy is going to be a Josh Allen type, Patrick Mahomes type, likable, beloved by everybody. And to me, that's a valuable metric that doesn't show up in the evaluation process. And on a normal year, when you have meetings with coaches at the Senior Bowl, meetings with coaches at the pro, at the combine, again at the pro day, again for a private visit, right? This year, everything's on Zoom. So it, does a team see that, and does that put him ahead somewhere? And I get that this is a results-driven league, but I'll just tell you, that is a valuable metric that Trey has to his favor.
Yeah. The you've been doing this so long. I look at quarterback. It used to be years ago that there were one or two guys that were just physically better than everybody. Elway, Marino, and then there was a drop-off. And now I look at Mahomes, and honestly, I'm not so sure Josh Allen isn't more talented. And I don't know how far Justin Herbert's down the list. Oh, wait, there's Aaron Rodgers. Oh, wait, there's Deshaun Watson. And I look at some of these kids run around, and I'm like, oh, my God, is talent insane? I'm getting to a point now where it used to be there were one or two guys that just felt different than the league. And we understood Elway was different and Marino was different. I almost feel like we're getting into an era, Jordan, where there's like nine guys. Is the quarterback play to me is getting better. I mean, I'm not so sure Justin Herbert isn't as good as Trevor Lawrence. I mean, they're same size. I mean, what do you make of the whole position that some of the old rules just don't apply because all these guys are bigger, stronger, and better?
Yeah, and there's different flavors too. You used to have to be 6'4 to play this position. You used to have to be 6'4 to get a D1 offer. We got 5'11 guys winning Heisman's, going number one overall and signing big contracts, right? We got a lefty who grew up on Hawaii. We're going to have our second guy from North Dakota State potentially taken in the top 10 in 4 years. This is an equal opportunity position across the board in every aspect. And like you said about Lamar, people can call him a running back all day. I mean, okay, try and stop him through the air. I mean, it's just, we're getting to this point, and I think it all starts at the youth level. And, you know, you and I have a mutual friend in Trent Dilfer, but there's a lot of great quarterback development. I saw you at Quincy Avery on the show, does a great job developing young quarterbacks. And there's just so much of that around the country. Plus all the 7-on-7 these kids do in high school. When I was in high school, there was one tournament a year. Right now, the average high school quarterback, according to what I heard, plays on 1.6 7-on-7 teams outside of his regular team. So by the time they get to college, they've just completed more balls. And by the time they get to the NFL, they've been in more situations, handled more pressure, had the social media stuff that they've had to deal with at a young age. They're just more polished and ready to play. And so what I'm telling young quarterbacks is, you don't have to be good to make it. You have to be great and better than everyone else to make it, because there's so many people coming and that are developed and they have more reps. And we're seeing it now where people keep asking me how crazy, you know, this draft this year is so crazy with these five guys. I think this is how it's going to be moving forward. There's three names in next year's draft that nobody's talking about. JT Daniels from Georgia, Desmond Ridder from the University of Cincinnati, and Carson Strong from University of Nevada. The reason people think next year's draft class is weak is because they don't see these three coming. And it's just going to be on and on and on each year. They're just more developed when they get there. And from a talent perspective, you got really talented guys that also got developed at a young age. And I think that's what we see with Zach Wilson, a smaller guy, but he's really talented and he's had great development.
The Spring League, Jordan will be an analyst, starts next Thursday, May 6th, 6-week season on Fox and FS1. A wealth of information, Jordan Palmer. Great seeing you, bud.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So there you go. Good stuff. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
So the Patriots could be making a move to move up in the draft. According to Albert Breer, New England has been showing interest in trading up to the top 10, presumably for a quarterback. And they have laid the groundwork with the Panthers for a trade for the 8th pick. They just traded, the Panthers did, Teddy Bridgewater to the Broncos for a 6th-round pick. So things in the top 10 could be very, very, very crazy tomorrow night. A lot of possible movement.
So New England's basically saying, listen, We're going to watch the draft. Let's agree to the picks and the players we're trading, mostly picks. And that's what they're doing. They'll wait till 8:45, see what Atlanta does. But you agree to terms. You lay the groundwork. We want this, this. Carolina goes, boom, boom. We have to trade Bridgewater. Let's see what we can get. And so this tells you they're moving up. They found a trade partner, although it could change. It could change if Atlanta takes a quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think that Atlanta is going to take a quarterback. It's looking like they are going to take Kyle Pitts, which is the right move to do. They don't need a quarterback. And if they didn't take Kyle Pitts, trade back and get more picks and build up your defense. That's really where they need. You know, to Jordan's point about all these quarterbacks that are coming in and playing at such a high level, you also have the other ends of veteran quarterbacks playing longer in Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson are making their careers last longer, Drew Brees. So it's not like there's like a shorter career span for quarterbacks. I mean, you never thought about 43-year-olds playing quarterback at a high level. So the quarterback position has just changed so much in what it is you can do, what type of quarterback you can be. You can be old, you can be young, you can be from a small school, you can be from a big school, and all of it can work depending on where you go and how they build around you. So it's just, we just have to reprogram our brains about what we believe is like the stereotypical quarterback or what you need for that position to win. So the Knicks have been the surprise of the NBA season.
No question.
Pleasant surprise. And their ascent to the 4 seed in the East has made the team more attractive to other players around the league. According to Mark Stein, the Knicks have rebuilt their reputation this season to the point that star players are finally prepared to consider them as a destination franchise again. They are 34-28, fourth in the East, behind the Nets, Sixers, and Bucks. Julius Randle obviously having an incredible season. Fun team to watch. Very Knicks, with a very Knicks identity, the way
defense,
that they play.
Defense, tough. Listen.
Very balanced.
Anytime you're a big brand, Alabama football, Michigan football, Laker basketball, you're going to have downturns.
Yeah.
Lakers were dog meat for 5 years. But the minute you show a glimmer of hope, everybody goes back to their memory as kids watching them and go, LeBron's like, yeah, I know the Lakers are bad now, but my whole childhood was watching the Lakers. So the Knicks, even though they're a losing franchise, their brand is so big. Once R.J. Barrett hits, and they had this drafted another kid last year that's playing well, and Julius Randle, now you look at them and think, God, they're just one player away. So if I'm a star, I'm like, I can go to New York, be the best player on the team, have a really good 2, Julius Randle, and a 3, R.J. Barrett. So now all of a sudden that's why in sports, what's great about sports is it mostly takes one great guy.
Yep.
Christian Pulisic, if we get to the World Cup, gives us a shot. I mean, it's like Mookie Betts. Oh, my God. I mean, so when you get an R.J. Barrett who looks like one of the best young players in the game, and then Julius Randle's good, you're just all you need. If I said tomorrow Giannis is on the Knicks, you'd be like, "Oh, it's a championship level roster."
I mean, can you imagine that? Like, can you imagine that? That's what's so exciting about it. That's why it irritates me so much that they've been in that situation with the brand being the just dysfunctional and the owners doing all these ridiculous things and kicking fans out for complaining in New York of all places. It's like the Knicks have such a strong brand. If you can just get it stable, guys will want to go play there again. But it's like Kevin Durant didn't even consider it. Like, no, I'm not going to the Knicks. I'm going to the Nets. Why would I go and put myself through that? So I'm glad that they're turning things around. It's been exciting to watch them, and I think they're going to be a problem in the playoffs as well. So we got this news yesterday. Floyd Mayweather is getting back in the ring for a special exhibition fight against YouTube star Logan Paul.
Logan Paul's never won a fight.
No. It will be held at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami on June 6th.
So I don't get... First of all, Floyd's boring. So the other fighter has to sell me on Floyd. And this guy, Logan Paul's not as good as the other Paul, the YouTube guy.
Yeah,
that guy can fight.
Yeah, I would rather have seen the fight between Jake Paul and Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, Jake Paul's number, he knocked a bunch of guys out. So I get a guy who's an amateur that's never won and a boring guy. This side doesn't do a thing for me.
It's going to be packed. Hard Rock Stadium is a massive venue. It's going to be Mayweather's first fight since an exhibition match in 2018. And as you mentioned, Logan Paul's only professional fight was back in 2019.
Yeah, 2 years ago and he lost.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, he could beat me up, but that doesn't, you know, I mean,
But that's not the standard. If they can beat us up, they better be able to beat us up. I mean, obviously we know that this is an exhibition fight, so it's not going to count against Mayweather's record anyway. But can you imagine, like, this is my problem with it as a whole. Like, I'm going to watch, obviously, and be actively involved.
I'll watch too, because
we're going to watch because, but if I'm Floyd Mayweather, what is the value? It's boxing.
Money.
Anything can happen.
You know what it is?
Even if he's the greatest fighter and best defensive fighter in the world. It's money.
Well, yeah, because Logan Paul's brother fought and they sold $75 million in pay-per-view.
Right, so they're going to sell more.
So Floyd saw that, went, $75 million and I wasn't on the card?
But how much is worth you take one bad step and Logan happens to catch you and then you go down against Logan Paul?
Then you just say, I slipped, let's fight again, and you make another $100 million.
I guess, you know what? Nobody's offering me $100 million. I can't really say what I would do in that situation.
Nobody remembers Michael Jordan's Wizards career. We remember the best moments of Floyd. If he slipped, fell, and lost, end of the day, he would fight him again and beat him badly, and we'd go, he slipped. Once in his career, he slipped.
Yeah.
Joy of the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
Andy
news.
Ruiz, the former heavyweight champ, got a fight this weekend. He stops by. Don't go anywhere.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, Andy Ruiz shocked the world. It was one of the great upsets in boxing heavyweight history. He was a 9-1 underdog and beat Anthony Joshua. He was the first ever Mexican heavyweight champion ever. 35 fights, he's won 33, most by knockout. But he has transformed his body since his last fight. He's lost 55 pounds. Andy Ruiz now joins us live. So let's talk about your weight loss. Do you worry, Andy, that when you lose 55 pounds as a heavyweight, that you've lost some of your punching power? Does that concern you?
No, that does not concern me at all. If anything, I'm going to have more power in my punches and my skills, because when I lost 55 pounds, you guys got to remember, when I lost against Anthony Joshua in Saudi Arabia, I gained almost 310 pounds, 315 pounds. So from that weight loss going down to 255, 257, we've been losing it the right way. You know, we had a lot of time to gain a little bit of muscle and trying to lose the fat and trying to tighten up the body. Like I tell everybody, I'm not where I want to be at, but I'm way better than I was before. And, you know, the main thing is just got to stay disciplined and stay busy and, you know, keep working to where I want to be at.
Were you a Tyson fan, a Holyfield fan, a Lennox Lewis fan? You're the first ever Mexican heavyweight champ. Who were you a fan of 10 years ago? Who were you watching as you were growing as a fighter?
You know, I had a lot of fans, you know, and I respect every fighter that jumps in the ring, because at the end of the day, we're risking our lives out there. And, you know, my dad always, when I was young, my dad always be watching fights and he would be cooking out carne asada and and all that when Chavez and Eric Morales, Barrera, when all those fighters will be fighting. So I kind of learned a little bit from each and every fighter, but one of my favorites was Julio Cesar Chavez and Holyfield as well, Muhammad Ali. But Holyfield was one of those heavyweights that was fearless, you know, and plus he was a cruiserweight and he jumped into a heavyweight, and he was the first person that always wanted to fight Mike Tyson, and he ended up winning the guy.
Yeah. So when you stunned Joshua, it was a 7th round TKO, then he beat you in the rematch in a unanimous decision. Let's go back to your last fight when you lost about 7-8 months ago. What did you learn in that loss?
I learned a lot. You know, I learned not to take things for granted. I learned things to stay disciplined. I kind of lost focus and all the things that were important.
Did we lose him? We had him. Zoom call. We lost him. He's frozen in time, is what he's hoping happens to Chris Areola Saturday. You guys give me an update? Do we have him or not? All right, we'll try to get him again. So they fight Saturday. It's pay-per-view. The weigh-in is actually today. The press conference is today. The weigh-in is tomorrow at 4 Eastern on FS1. He lost 55 pounds in 7 months.
It is important how you lose weight like that, though, to his point, if you lose it the right way. Like, it's one thing to just go out and, like, eat a bunch of vegetables and run 10 miles a day. But if you do it slowly and, like, consistently and build muscle as you're losing weight, it's a more intentional way to do it. It's healthier.
For the record, if you're just tuning in, the Denver Broncos did make a trade during our show. So they have traded to acquire Teddy Bridgewater, the starting quarterback of Carolina last year, but perceived to be the backup once they went and got Sam Darnold, who's a bigger, stronger, more dynamic quarterback. Matt Rhule wants somebody who can make plays, not just manage the offense. So Denver, kind of running out of patience with a more talented but reckless guy, they go get Teddy Bridgewater, and the quarterback room now has a veteran who doesn't make a ton of mistakes, limited arm talent, and the high-ceiling guy, the classic high-ceiling guy. Teddy Bridgewater is much more Mac Jones. Drew Lock is much more Justin Fields, which he'll push the ball, he can run around, he can improvise. And so there's a classic example of a high-ceiling, makes mistakes, didn't work, and they got tired of it. And Denver now says, we want guy lower ceiling but can play now. And it should be noted, Vic Fangio's in a situation in Denver where he's got to win. Vic Fangio will be out of work if Denver does not at least show signs of life. 9-8. 9-8. You know, 10-7, he absolutely keeps his job. It's a good division. 9-8, Elway has meetings with Peyton, the new GM. Anything less than that, Vic Fangio's out. So obviously you don't want coaches running your draft board because coaches want guys who can help right now. But I do think it gets Darnold. It's his job. He goes from a mess in the Jets when he had a bad O-line, no running game, and dysfunction in coaching to functional coaching, star running back, and they're going to upgrade their O-line in this draft. All they need is a left tackle. So it's a really big win for Sam Darnold. For Teddy Bridgewater, who would rather play than sit, and they were done with him in Carolina. It's a win for Teddy Bridgewater. The loser in it is Drew Lock, who's super talented, but Jordan Palmer said the quarterback room is better, maybe, but Drew Lock didn't want a better quarterback room. He wanted the starting job, and I doubt he has it. I also think if you look around at what Denver's doing, now Denver's still telling everybody, hey, we're not out of the quarterback business. Carolina was saying that a week ago. When Carolina had Darnold and Bridgewater, they were announcing, we are not out of the quarterback business. New England calls them and says, we'd like to take you out of the quarterback business. Can we have your number 8 pick? I never thought Carolina was in the quarterback business. You're not going to go Darnold, Bridgewater, and draft a guy in the middle of a rebuild when you need a left tackle and two corners. Denver's going to say, we're still in the quarterback business. But you're not really in the quarterback business if you have a young, high-ceiling guy and a veteran guy. All right, we got one more question with Andy Ruiz, former heavyweight champ. He's going to join us live one more time now. All right, Andy, let's go back to this question again. You fought Joshua twice. You knocked him out TKO seventh, and then you lost a unanimous decision. What did you learn in the loss to him?
I learned a lot, you know, not to take things for granted, you know, to be more disciplined, to work harder, you know, because at the last fight against me and Anthony Joshua in Saudi Arabia, I kind of lost focus because, remember, I've been waiting for this moment for 28 years. And when I end up winning, I kind of went the wrong road. And I regret that to this day right now. But, you know, things happen for a reason. And, you know, maybe the reason was, what if I would have won Anthony Joshua in Saudi Arabia, what I would have been thinking the same way as I used to before or right now, because right now I feel I'm more focused, I'm more disciplined, and, you know, I know exactly what I need to do and I know exactly what I shouldn't do. So, you know, in this boxing, you can't play. So you have to work hard, you have to be disciplined, and that's exactly what Canelo and Eddie have been showing me.
By the way, 30 seconds left. Give me a prediction for Saturday. How long's the fight last?
You know what? Everybody's been telling me that a prediction. The only prediction I could say is that I'm going to become victorious and I'm going to win. And, you know, I got to climb back up to those ladders, and Chris Arreola's in front of me. So best believe I got to cross him out and, you know, move on to the next. But I'm ready for May 1st, and it's going to be an all action fight. Just make sure you guys tune in, baby.
Andy Ruiz, first Mexican heavyweight champ ever, trying to bounce back from the Joshua loss. Thank you so much, Andy, for stopping by. By the way, if you look at his old footage fighting and you look at him during the interview, you can see a clear reshaping and restructuring of his body. He looks, just in the face alone, significantly thinner. 55 pounds is a lot, even for a 300-pound dude. 55 pounds is a lot of weight, even for a big cat.
Very significant. It wasn't that long ago from the last fight, either.
Enjoy spa-like comfort. Save big on your water bill. Go to tanklessmadesimple.com. Navien tankless, more efficient, hot water never runs out. And this Mother's Day, it's May 10th. Sign up now, 1-800-Flowers.com. 24 multicolored roses and a free vase. $34.99, 1-800-FLOWERS, book it today, offer ends today, the code is H-E-R-D. All right, we're done. We had a deal, we got a trade right in the middle of the show. Draft tomorrow, rooting for more of the hosts. We've had a good run on stories happening during our show. Hope another one happens tomorrow.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.